It's March 2nd, and that means it's Old Stuff Day. Going to be fitting for anybody who needs to get rid of some old stuff, throw things away, start things new. Feel free to repurpose your old stuff. We're going to be talking about food. Food actually is a great place to start because it's fundamental. Instead of being a source of joy and community, it becomes a source of frustration and pain because people can't get good food. Kara Irani is here. Welcome.
Thank you.
Brave traffic. And anyone who's listening probably knows what braving traffic is like. Kara's from Banana Food Bank. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, sure. So I'm the director of marketing and communication at Mana. It is my distinct pleasure to be able to work with the people that I work with, not just the staff, but the volunteers, the partner agencies at Mana Food Bank. So I think one of the big secrets about Mana is that we are a huge network. We cover all 16 counties of Western North Carolina, including the Koala boundary. And we partner with nonprofits across the region in doing immediate on-the-ground food relief. We also run a food helpline and serve not just our region, but we can serve anybody across the state with our food helpline. And that signs people up for SNAP, which is the Supplemental Nutrition
Right.
Assistance Program.
Okay. MANA, does that stand for anything?
It is a historical acronym, yeah. Okay. Mountain Area Nutritional Needs Alliance.
Okay.
And we're actually celebrating our 40th anniversary this year, so I've been digging back into some archives and finding some old newspaper clippings and things from over the years. So it's been really interesting to read some of that history.
Let's talk a little bit about the folks who you serve.
Sure. In a broad swath, the folks that we're serving are, for the majority, they're working full-time, and their basic living expenses outpace what their income can cover. So we see people across the region, families with children, seniors. We serve a lot of young families. And housing is very expensive, not just here in Buncombe County, but across the entire region. It's a real struggle for people. And that puts massive pressure on the rest of the budget. We know food prices are up, utility costs, all of that stuff. We're primarily serving working class families across the region with food that they need that even working full time, they can't access, can't afford.
How do those people interact with the network so they get their food?
Yeah, so we fill the gap by working with partners who are right in everyone's communities, churches, nonprofit folks, meal sites, all kinds of places. Those on the ground community leaders are helping identify the people that need food, as well as spreading the word about their resources. They often do more than just food relief. They often run, shelters or other programs, childcare stuff, adult daycare things, to help support whatever the community needs. And every community is slightly different. Every area around the mountains here have just slightly different needs. So those are the partners that we're working with every single day.
And so food is just a part of it.
Food is a part of it. And absolutely. I mean, we're part of a safety net. And usually when people are at the point where they need food and they're coming to one of our partners, it's because there have been a crisis of challenges in their lives that have put them in this place,
right,
that they've been experiencing.
So one of the things that Hub and I were talking about before you got here was what some of those might be. Is it transportation?
Sure.
Is it a healthcare issue? Like,
yeah.
what are job loss? What are you typically seeing?
Yeah, I would say yes, yes, and yes. Mm. I think one thing to understand is, even just for ourselves, how many crises could we weather in a short period? If we needed to pay a steep hospital bill, I mean, God forbid you're in an accident or have something happen or get sick. If you have to replace a car, if you have a major appliance break down at your house, most households are only one or two serious incidents away from being in a real crisis situation. And that is what we really see. It used to be a lot more around health issues and lack of insurance and medical debt. But recently, it's really just that people's expenses, just regular household living expenses, are outpacing what they can possibly bring in for income. So the formula is changing just a little bit for us, especially since the pandemic. We've seen all of these socioeconomic pieces just get amplified here,
right,
in Western North Carolina, especially.
So talk a little bit about your distribution pieces.
Yeah, so MANA is a sourcing agent of food. And so that's why we work with this partnership with 260 plus partners across the region. So we are sourcing large amounts of food from wholesale operations, from our retail grocery store partners, from farmers, from produce packaging places. We have the capability of bringing in bulk amounts of food, and then we work with partners on getting that food to them across their region. A lot of partners come and pick up their orders from MANA, and so we essentially pack a pallet of food. It can be breads and canned goods and fresh vegetables and frozen things. It's a whole range of stuff, perishable and shelf stable. And they come and pick it up, or we put it on one of our trucks. We have a fleet of 13 trucks okay. that we send across Western North Carolina every day. And we make deliveries and take the food out to Robbinsville, you know, Swain County. We're going all the way up to Avery County. We're going to Polk County. So it's a very, you know, we have a widespread distribution network. We do it on a shoestring, but really we do it on a shoestring because volunteers are woven into every single step of what we do. They're also helping us drive food across the region. We have volunteer drivers who are running pantry markets. We have mobile markets all over the area. They drive those trucks out and host pop-up distributions. It's a very... We like to call it the food security ballet. You know, there's just an army of people interwoven doing all of these things every single day, getting food out to people while it's still good, while they can eat it, while it's, you know, something right. that would nourish their bodies, essentially. And the partners are on the other end connecting that to folks. We talk to people every single day that we're serving and see where they're at and what their challenges are and try to work on the gaps that we have in our own area.
So are most of the folks who work with Manda volunteers, or are they part of the staff? It just seems like you need a lot of people. Sure. And where do they come from?
Yeah. So just to give you an idea, we have about 90 some staff members. We have about 10 IWP workers. So this is a really cool program that we run where we partner with the women's prison in Swannanoa, and they come and learn warehouse skills and do things to help us out at MANA. So that's about 100 folks there. Then we have over 2,000 volunteers every single year that help just MANA. And then we have our 260 partner agencies. The majority of those are volunteer run. And so there is a vast network of thousands of volunteers across our area, across the entire mountain area in North Carolina that is doing this food security work.
And how many people do you serve?
Well, right now we continue to serve a huge peak. We are serving over 125,000 people every single month. That is far above, far, far above. I can't stress this enough. It is double what we were serving before the pandemic. We were serving about 65,000 people on average every month. That isn't really a snapshot of how many people actually need food in Western North Carolina. Those are just the folks that are able to get to our network of people. We estimate that there's probably more folks out right. there that need help. But yeah, we've seen a huge, huge increase. And it has been a distinctive challenge over the last several years. It really has.
We all understand the pandemic, but what are the specific things mm-hmm. that drove this up?
So one of those things in our area specifically is housing costs.
Okay.
I mean, just since 2021, they've gone up 27%. Asheville is hands down the worst rental market in the state, and it is the fifth worst rental market in the country. And that is, when you're faring worse than places like San Francisco and New York for housing,
right.
you know you're in bad shape. So that's coupled with the average wages here are still very low. They're much lower than the state average and far below the national average. So those two things alone are putting people in a compromised position to start. The advice and the general guidance is you only want to spend 30% of your income on housing for it to be affordable. And more than 50% of people who live in this area are paying at least 50% of their income on housing. It's already unaffordable for most of us.
You've got big city prices and rural wages.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. That's just one of the things. Food costs have always been a little harder here.
Yeah.
You know, things have been a little more expensive.
Why has food been more expensive here?
Yeah, you know, because we're a smaller market, it takes, you know, more travel time and more trucking to get food to our grocery stores, to our restaurants. You know, it just takes a little bit more to get it into the mountains. But yeah, so that's those two things alone, the wage piece, the housing piece, are the big pressures that we see affecting people every single day.
So to what degree is food supply a problem then?
Food supply is, it depends on what kind of food supply you're talking about. So if we're talking about food supply that keeps grocery prices low, then that's a global challenge. And that is something that we're seeing because of a variety of things. You know, the avian flu has affected egg prices, of course, and that's been going on for a couple of years, which is why we're now seeing so much of that at the retail level. The war in Ukraine is affecting wheat prices. That affects a lot of goods.
Right.
That's just an ingredient in many, many things that end up on our shelves. There's that piece of it. But then there's the food challenge that food banks across the country, including MANA, are seeing right now, is that our large-scale donations, our reason for being is to be a piece in the food system that rescues food that would go to waste.
Right.
That's really why food banking was started in the late 70s. Now we are seeing that there is not that extra food going to waste anymore because of everything that's happening in the global food supply chain. And so donations are down drastically to food banks across the country. We used to, 85% of our inventory before the pandemic was donated, and now about 55 to 60% of our inventory is donated. And so that means that we are purchasing food at astronomical rates right now, and that is because we know we have to meet the need for the people who are turning to us. We will absolutely not let someone come to one of our partners or to a MANA market and walk away empty-handed.
Are the donations down because obviously less giving, but is there less giving because the prices are so high that the suppliers aren't buying, like the retail stores aren't buying, the wholesalers aren't buying because the prices are so high?
Yeah, that's part of it. I think grocery stores at the very beginning of the pandemic, when there were these crazy runs on specific products, you know, the great toilet paper run of 2020, that they were not prepared to handle those big changes in demand on a dime. Just like MANA, everybody had to kind of like change their full logistic operating. So they got better at managing their margins, as well as they got tighter on warehousing. So they're not holding as much product anymore. I think that's why it's more likely that you will go and see that something is out on the shelves these days, as opposed to everything just being plentiful and there's always another piece of product, no matter how many you take off the shelf.
Right.
So I think it has changed at that level. And that's very reflective in our world, because we were exclusively dependent on the extra stuff that didn't make it to the retail storefront part. Grocery stores are really unique in that they understand food insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
They want to feed people, you know, and we work with incredible grocery partners. You know, our CEO just came back from a conference in Florida with Publix, and they're talking about, hey, we don't want to waste this product. Here's our pain points. What are your guys' pain points? Let's figure out how this works best to serve people who need food.
Right.
So there's a lot of action around how do we make things better so that we can make the world better. I think that we're just still in such a strange economic situation because of the pandemic, because of all of these larger scale macro social and economic issues, that it really is impacting those industries in a very large way. I think it's just changed a lot in the last couple of years. So
have you talked to grocery stores about food deserts and whether and why they may not open a store there?
Usually it's just, can they make the numbers work?
And it's just expensive to put in a store.
It's very expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's expensive to put it in and staff it and keep it. I mean, food is expensive to handle every day anyway. Any restaurant you talk to will tell you this. It is a daily, you know, every item that you are trying to get out the door, you're touching at least three times. It takes a lot of manpower, person power. It takes a lot of culling and keeping things fresh and being really on top of your product. So it's a lot of people time to just manage a healthy food supply at that kind of level.
So where do you think government and policy is on this?
Okay, so this is a really interesting piece of this. One of the things that we saw during the pandemic was government programs, like commodity programs, where they essentially purchase food directly from farmers and producers, and they deliver it to food banks like us. One of the programs that we operate like this is, it's called TFAP for short, but it stands for the Emergency Food Assistance Program. That's a commodity program that we run. So we probably get about 25% of our food through that program, maybe a little less every year. And in the pandemic, with all of these congressional funding supports, we were able to receive dramatically more food through these commodities programs. We saw our TFAP programs increase double probably during the pandemic. And so ironically, even though we were serving more people in 2020 and 2021, food insecurity rates actually went down because we were able to get more food to people who needed it right then. We saw all of that go away this past year. Our food distribution numbers are down. All of that was because of the change in government programs, and we're still seeing this peak need. And so now we are having to pinch and scrape and save and fundraise and get every dollar we can just to purchase the food that we need. And so, you know, it's very, food costs are expensive across the board for everyone, including food banks. And so we're purchasing groceries for 125,000 people a month right now. And that is really where I've seen the power of public partnership and government programs step in. During the pandemic, we saw they stepped in and overnight there was support. They expanded SNAP for folks. And in February, those emergency allotments lapsed. And so now, as of now, people are, you know, having to buy groceries that are more expensive with less money. I can't underscore how important these government programs are. I don't think it's an extreme thing to say that government programmatic work could end hunger. Our federal representatives and our state representatives could end hunger for everyone right now if they wanted to. And whether that looks like, you know, expanding SNAP or whatever it looks like, using our existing systems to get food to people, but just having it supported and with public support, we really could. We could end hunger right now if we wanted to.
So what's standing in the way from a philosophical and belief standpoint? Because you're right, that's taking a pen and signing it. But there's a rationale that says we're not going to do that. Any idea of what that rationale is?
I think people have been convinced by a lot of myths over the years about who needs food and why. We know that the myth of someone who is living high on the hog on SNAP is completely false. You know, you have to be making abysmal poverty wages to even be eligible for SNAP. And so there is no such thing as the welfare queen. Right. I mean, we know that that's not true. And then there really is an assumption that people who are hungry are also housing insecure and also deep in these multi-layer challenges, living in a shelter, you know, don't have other basic needs met. And that is absolutely false as well.
Elaborate on that.
Yeah. So I'll just give you a personal example. I grew up here in Asheville. I went to Oakley Elementary when I was a kid. You know, my parents got divorced when I was really young, and my mom was a single mom supporting kids. And we had a tiny little apartment over in East Asheville. And there were several weeks where I didn't realize it at the time, but looking back, I understand now, where she made some really creative dinners for us. And it was basically whatever we could scrape together in the pantry, whatever we could get from probably a man of food bank type distribution, and you know, just to make ends meet. And so what that looks like is single moms not eating dinner so that their kids can eat, but they're able to like put gas in the tank and go to work and pay the bills, and everything looks normal from the outside. And that's really where we see a lot of this, is parents skipping meals so that kids can eat. That's definitely food insecurity. Kids not knowing where their next meal is going to come from if they're not at school. So free and reduced meals at school are really vital for solving child hunger, especially. And seniors who are having to choose between whether they buy their medicine that they need or whether they can buy groceries that would support their health.
So why do you think this message isn't getting through? There's plenty of information out there that says hunger is a problem. Mm. It says nutrition is a problem, which leads to healthcare problems.
Yeah.
Overpriced housing leads to, you know, housing insecurity, low wages. There's plenty of information, plenty of stats out there that reinforce this notion that we should be doing more to address these things. Why aren't we addressing these things?
Part of it is there is such a deep stigma around food support and food access that it is really hard for people to talk about when they're experiencing it. And so it's hard to put a face to it. Even if you're experiencing on your own, you don't want to admit it. You know, a lot of people just say, oh, I'm broke and I just have to like scrape by with some ramen noodles or whatever. Well, that's food insecurity.
Right.
If you can't afford to actually have a healthy meal, that's food insecurity. It's easy to couch it in all of our survival techniques of, oh, I just have to do this. Oh, I'm going to go, you know, donate plasma just to pay my light bill or whatever it is. You know, when we're in college and scraping by and it's this acceptable thing of living broke, hand to mouth kind of thing, it is not as visible. It feels a little bit more just normalized. But I do think that if people talked more about it, especially working folks who are struggling to pay bills at the bottom of this, there seems to be the psychological challenge of we have somehow equated in our society that if you don't make enough money, that it's a personal failing, that like you're not as valuable as a human being. And equating money with personal value, I think, has been a real challenge in terms of the stigma of food insecurity. Because food insecurity should not exist in a country as wealthy as America. We have plenty for everyone. The world really does have plenty of food for everyone. Right.
So would you say that one of the big challenges is that people are embarrassed?
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe we're understating the food problem because people don't want to admit that
Absolutely.
They're struggling with eating.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We call it mountain pride. We interact with a lot of folks who, even though they might not have running water in their house, they insist that they're fine and they'll be able to get by and they don't need to apply for SNAP. We talk to folks a lot about applying for SNAP because that's really fundamentally the most important anti-hunger program and the most successful anti-hunger program in the country.
Well, you mentioned that those benefits are expired.
Well, there was an emergency allotment, so an extension of those benefits. So during the pandemic, folks were able to get the maximum benefit for their household size, and that just ended in February. So now they're getting still a benefit for their household size, but it might be far less than what it was, especially for, say, seniors who make barely enough to qualify, like, say, on the top end. So they make just little enough money to qualify for it, but it might just be them in the household. Sometimes those benefits might only be $16 a month.
And do you know what is the threshold for qualifying for that? Like, what's the income threshold for a senior? Do you know that number?
Yeah, it's somewhere in the low 20s of income, like 20, you know, $21,000, $24,000, something like that.
Does that include Social Security?
Yeah, any kind of income.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So yeah. That amount of money for housing, transportation,
it might even
and
be less than
food.
That, quite honestly. Yeah.
My gosh. And that's the qualification. And yeah. Once you're over that, you can just get a tiny bit, maybe, mm-hmm. of some SNAP.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
But this is the kind of information that I think really helps hit home for those of us who just might not be aware of this or mm-hmm. might have different ideas about who are these people,
right?
Or those people who mm-hmm. are food insecure. You know, Eric, I am reminded of a guest we had not long ago who was beyond fully employed, beyond well-educated, and told us that towards the end of the month, she often has to go to a food bank or food mm-hmm. pantry to feed her family.
Well, it seems kind of clear that the minimum thresholds to earn benefits are mm-hmm. impossibly low.
They're ridiculous.
And it's ancient. I don't know when they were established, but it sounds like they were established in the 40s or 50s or something,
mm-hmm.
and they haven't been updated because that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So do you expect that the 125,000 people per month that you're seeing is going to grow?
We do. Actually, right now we're bracing to serve many more people because of the end of the emergency allotments for SNAP. And that is hitting people. People are going to lose at least everyone is going to lose $90 a month in benefits. Some families might lose even up to $280 a month in benefits. So, I don't know where you get that money from if you're already struggling.
Right. And so, I mean, the picture is something like, and this is going on everywhere, incredibly mm-hmm. expensive house prices, mm-hmm. low wages, expensive food, expensive rent, and you have to earn so little
yes.
that you're starving anyway. And
yes.
otherwise, you can't get benefits.
Absolutely.
The only thing that can happen is more people will be stressed.
Right.
That's the only way. And because the people who can afford that won't be stressed, but
right.
everybody else will.
Yeah.
What are some of the other things that folks could do?
So there's a lot of things that people can do on the ground level, honestly. Right now is a great time to get educated about the federal funding that actually supports food assistance programs, because they're about to vote on it in the next couple of months. If you have any interest in advocating for MANA or for the people that we're serving, now is the time to get in touch with us. We do advocacy work at the state and federal level. So we work with our representatives that represent Western North Carolina. We are in coalitions with other food banks and other nonprofits addressing these social issues that impact the people that we're serving. And we know that So the solutions can happen. And so we're trying to not just show what the dire situation is right now, but what it can look like. And one thing that we're really excited about is Medicaid expansion is actually looking like a reality right now in North Carolina for the first time since this was made available to states through federal funding. And so I've really grown into like a political junkie since I started at MANA. I was kind of like a pseudo dabbler, but now I'm just like in it. And the state stuff especially is so unique because we have so much more access to our representatives and can really understand what's going on at the state level. And so right now, Medicaid expansion, this bill has already passed the North Carolina House. It is in committee with the Senate right now and could potentially expand health coverage to over 600,000 people in North Carolina alone.
Tell folks a little bit more about that.
Yeah.
What are some of the details?
Absolutely. So what it would do is give coverage, expand coverage to people who are not currently on Medicaid, but should be. Mostly these are families with children. So children are the main people who benefit from Medicaid. And so what this does is provide health care that is very vital for a family to be able to maintain every month or every year. I mean, if you just think about, you know, some of the things that can happen with your family and you don't have health insurance or you don't have health care or available things, that's a very expensive out-of-pocket thing to have to seek out. But the other benefit of Medicaid is that there are nutrition programs associated with Medicaid. We actually are working with the state right now through Impact Health on a pilot called Healthy Opportunities Pilot. And we are providing healthy, nutritionally curated food boxes for different health conditions that people are experiencing. And we're working with seniors right now. And we're working with folks who are, you know, can apply through that program. And that is the first of its kind in the country, actually. North Carolina is very interesting in this way of being like super progressive on one end and very conservative on the other. We get such an interesting mix of different ideals and how people approach things. But North Carolina is ahead of the game on using Medicaid funds to address food insecurity and other social determinants of health. And that's what the Healthy Opportunities Pilot is doing right now.
So one of the things that's becoming a theme on the show is these overlapping systems.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually had Lori Stradley, who was leading that pilot for Healthy Opportunities. And it's kind of unavoidable. And one of the things for listeners is this kind of idea of we're building a system for folks who are disadvantaged
mm-hmm.
that a lot of people take for granted. Whether, I mean, if you have a car
right.
and you have a decent job, you and you have family and friends who are in the same situation,
right.
you have a built-in network
That's right.
that we're trying literally with tax dollars to recreate. It seems a little odd that we're asking the government to do something. It just seems odd to me that we're asking the government to do something that a lot of people do just by waking up in the morning.
Right. Yeah. It's a funny way to put that.
Well, why?
I don't know. That's just like, it really is true though. You know, I mean, it just, the humanity just gets pulled out of things when it becomes these big organizational structures. You know,
it's never as simple as you might think.
I know.
Are there things that the media can be doing or social media?
Mm-hmm.
Are there things that businesses can be doing? Are there other special interest groups that maybe should be really digging in on this kind of thing?
Oh, definitely. I mean, this is something that affects everyone. One of the things that we always encourage our business partners to do, so we work with local businesses. We have folks who donate to us, but also come and volunteer, do a variety of things. We talk to them about what living wage at their business looks like. Are they providing their employees with a living wage? Are they contributing to the problem or are they helping with it in their own backyard?
What is a living wage? Because I do think our society loves memes, terms, and then we don't define them. Medicaid expansion. So we have to get into some detail. What does a living wage look like?
Well, I mean, you know, the basic definition of a living wage is that you can earn enough money working 40 hours a full-time job to support yourself with your basic needs. With all of your basic needs met, essentially. And in Buncombe County, Just Economics is an awesome organization. We love them so much. And they just increased our Buncombe County living wage to $20 an hour. To put it into perspective, right now, the federal poverty level for a family of four is $30,000 a year. So that's basically the baseline for what a family of four can be eligible for if they don't make enough money for a variety of things.
And that's pre-tax.
Yeah. And that works out to about $14 an hour. I don't know how anyone can support a family on $14 an hour. You just can't. There's no way that you can make that math work. One of the things that we know could change is by changing those basic eligibility levels to be more modern with what households are looking at right now. Because we know that people, a family of four, can make $50,000 a year and still not have enough for food. So there's a lot of pieces that people can consider when it comes to solving hunger, as along with a lot of other issues. I mean, these are all, we say the term social determinants of health. These are things that affect people on multiple levels. And it's their ability to have, you know, gainful employment and their ability to access health care. All of these things are dependent on these social determinants of health. And supporting one is really important, especially if we have an organization that is saying, hey, here is the realistic costs of what it takes to live in our community. So therefore, this is the realistic pay that it takes to live in our community.
Do you
just a quick math thing, that's $41,600 annually.
The $20
an hour.
$20 an hour.
No. I was kind of thinking as we were talking how important it is to get to the math. I would encourage folks to think about their own weekly bills and just how much more or less it is if they factor in all those things, because there's car, there's insurance on the car, there's health benefits, which are usually through your employer. Groceries,
not for $20
gas.
An hour.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You get health
all
insurance
stuff adds
if you're
up.
Making $20 an hour.
Yeah. Right. So all of this stuff adds up, and it doesn't, and it exceeds $40,000 a year, $50,000 a year.
Right.
How receptive are businesses to essentially digging into their profits to pay people?
I think it is something that they're looking at more and more as they recognize the value that that brings to their own organization. I know that there's this quiet quitting phrase that's out there right now and all of these terms around workforce empowerment. And I think that businesses are really paying attention to that because they want, first of all, they want to be successful. And to be successful, you have to have happy, productive employees. I mean, that's just a bare minimum. And so I think that there's really more attention being turned to that of retaining good people. And they know that they have to pay people more in order to do that, in order to survive.
To what degree are we talking about this in social media where it's people talking to other people? Mm-hmm. Do you feel like people are talking about food in a healthy and productive way?
It depends on what groups you're in. You know, social media is like corralling the like with the like. But I do think that what it does is give people an opportunity to share their experiences. And that is the single most important thing that can affect the work that Mana is doing every day, is sharing if you've ever been food insecure and gone to a pantry, sharing, you know, if you've ever been on SNAP, if you've ever had food stamps and what that experience is like for other people. You know, busting that stigma is so important so that folks actually start accessing the things that they need before they're in crisis points. That's one thing that we can all do, as well as just building community network around this. I mean, you know, Mana is part of this charitable safety net that exists because the public safety net isn't enough. And we're not going to let anybody fall through the cracks if we don't have to, but we can't go out and find everyone. And we want people to know that we're here and that they can access our support, that any of us at any time could need this community support, and that that's why it is so important that we always maintain a strong safety net. And we're really lucky in this community because Western North Carolina is deeply supportive of each other. It's a neighbor support neighbor kind of place. And we've truly seen people step forward in huge, huge ways as the challenges and crises grow for all of us. So that's something that I think is really powerful, is that you really can make a difference, not just through advocating and using your voice, which is incredibly important and also free, but you can make a donation to Mana or your local pantry who is doing this work right in your community. And you can volunteer and become part of this work and see it firsthand and understand how simple, but also how complicated it is.
We need another safety net. We're asking people to dig deep, to build a safety net, because the current safety net that is funded with tax dollars doesn't work. And yet, when we do that, we'll have more productive people who are happier with their lives, probably happier with the country because it's doing something for them, so they get back on their feet. They can send their kids to school without worrying about them. But the problem is the safety net's kind of shredded. Mm. And we're asking people to dig deeper and organizations like you to fix that. That's kind of concerning to me.
Yeah.
Because we're asking to fix something that doesn't seem like it really, it seems like common sense.
Yeah.
That we should fix this.
Well, I think that one of the things that we do every day is we do see these problems up close and personal. And we are, you know, working with some really incredible subject matter experts on a variety of things to make these things a solution at a large scale across the country. You know, with Feeding America, we're a member of Feeding America, lots of really innovative and passionate people there. And then all the way down to the partner agency that's serving the folks within a 2-block radius in Transylvania County. That there are solutions and compassionate people at every level. We just have to listen to the people who are experiencing this about what they actually need and create solutions that support everyone from that level, not just people who are working or people who are valid of support. You know, I think really busting this myth of people want to just suck off the government. That's not true. We have not seen that at all.
Well, it sounds like there's nothing to suck off of. I mean, it doesn't sound like there's a whole lot there.
Well, and quite frankly, most people want to be on their own 2 feet doing their own thing, you know? And that is really what we see across the board is people want to be empowered to live their own lives in the ways that feel best to them.
Well, and I think that's true. I think we're hearing more and more that people do want to be self-sufficient. Mm-hmm. They want to take responsibility. And I think there's plenty of people who want to help. We just have some major systemic challenges. We have to go. Kara, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having
me. Your organization is doing great stuff, and it's a real pleasure. Everybody, have a great day. Thank you.